You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Tuesday morning, welcome to a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for the one and only All Warrior Radio Network, and fired up today. Gonna post-traumatic winning's gonna get in the expeditionary mode here, so excited about that again, and headed for the East Coast, and flying out of Orange County, and then headed to Denver, Atlanta, and then Jacksonville. So, yeah, getting to Jacksonville, not the easiest place you ever go. So hopefully everything works out. And then on Wednesday, do the audio checks and video checks and stuff like that. And hopefully, you know, one of the cool things about going back to places that I've been is a chance to, you know, reconnect with people and talk to people who you've met, people who've come up to you at these things and introduced themselves and wanted to talk about their lives and their struggle and how post-traumatic winning, spoke to them in some way. And so get a chance to do that. And that's always very cool. That's always very cool to see people that you know, you cross paths with. So excited to do that, and just kind of get doing post-traumatic winning again. It's been since the end of February was the last time that that I did it, and so yeah, if you can believe that. So, if that's the drug that you like, post-traumatic winning, then that's too long not to take your drug. So, yeah, so I'm really excited to do it. There's stuff that'll be in this that, based on some things I've written and some, you know, the way I try to articulate and paint a picture for people about, the fourth path. The path of post-traumatic winning. And so, you know, and so a couple of things that'll be in it. One is the, just the, the idea of that this problem is conquerable, right? So my thought in terms of conquerable is this. It's important for people to know what a serious mental illness is, all right, by definition. What is an SMI, serious mental illness? And then what percentage of the population has that, both civilian population and the DOD population? So, and I think the numbers are 90%. They might be a little bit lower. They might be high 80s, but I mean, it's around 90% of the country is free of serious mental illness. In the DOD, it's over 95%. So when you paint that picture, you say, okay, this is the percentage of people that have a serious mental illness. You know what that means? That means 90% of everybody in the United States doesn't have a serious mental illness. And if you don't have a serious mental illness, I've got something that I want to show you. Right? If you meet people that have serious mental illness, what has to happen is they've got to deal with that first. And then I've got something for you. Okay? Now, maybe you can do it simultaneously, but my experience is you can't. There's a sequential attack of that thing. You know, give them some sense of the magnitude of the problem. Okay? So if you aren't in that group, guess what? If for the people that commit suicide that aren't in that group, guess my experience, what is it? It's the fact that they've been overwhelmed by life. Overwhelmed by life. And so I think that that's really important point. And so it gives them some sense of, you know, well, geez, most of the country can do it. You know, I could probably do this too. So, you know, it's just different ways to articulate the same information. And so hopefully you make it more vivid, things like that. The other thing, I was hoping to have the second draft of the book done. But I probably won't get it done before Thursday. When I put it up, I'll let everybody know. You can check it out. It's mostly the presentation. So I want to have something that, you know, people who have seen it or maybe want to give it to a friend or something, or want to be able to take it and read it again. And then, I'll put it on my website and charge something to download the book. And then if you download the book, you can have access to an audio version of essentially the class. It'll be a video. So that way people can watch it again. They can sit down and watch it with a friend. So anyway, that's almost done, but not quite. So anyways, but exciting. It's been interesting, talking to Sergeant Major 2nd Division a couple times. Sergeant Major Krause, have never met him. I've heard great things about him. But one of the things, that will be different about this version of post-traumatic winning is there's a leader class that goes with it. And, I'm not sure that the Marines of the 2nd Marine Division know this, especially the leaders, but they are as far down the road as anybody on the planet, in my opinion, in terms of dealing with. They have put more effort into this issue than anybody I know. I'm anxious to hear from them in terms of what works, what doesn't work. I have a couple things that I think I can, add to the discussion. And so, of course, I want to do that. And then, do a lot of listening to it, what they think. And because really, post-traumatic winning just is a door opener. It's a long time ago, I used the term blue-collar mental health. And I coined that term. And I mean, I like it. I like that term. And so, because if 90% of us can get through this, or 90% of us don't have a serious mental health issue, then, how does a class like this, how does it speak to people? How does it show them a place that they can get to? So in this long process, because, mental health is more than going to a class, right? It's, you got to operationalize it. So really the class is a jump start. It's an education. Hopefully it's an eye opener. It's motivational in terms of you can do this, and you can then, if you'll study it a little bit, you can then turn around and impact the lives of a lot of people. And I always say that every tool that I use, I'm going to, by the end of the day, by the end of these 3 hours, you're going to have it. And, you can go around hopefully doing what I do, which is just stopping people that are struggling and who want to talk and say, "Hey, man, can I talk to you?" And then just tell them the truth. And people figure it out. People figure it out. And so anyway, but post-traumatic winning is just, the first step in that. And I hope, by the way, it's presented, it comes across as something from our culture. I hope it comes across as something that takes a bit of the mystery out of it. It also takes a bit of the stigma out of it, that if we're all really struggling with this, then I shouldn't be embarrassed. And, then you have people like myself during the class, and, in this case, General Furness will, he'll talk about himself and when he introduces it, and then he close it. So after that, after you can get young, people and old people to see it for the first time, then what you do is you have to do something with that. And to me, what General Furness and the regimental commanders have all, done is they bought into the idea that, know them better, love them, and operationalize this. And if you do that, a lot of other issues will go away. And so, and that's the hard part, the day on, stay on, taking young leaders and trying to evolve their leadership style to the point where they get it that, we don't want you to be your guy at Paris Island or your guy at MCRD. That's not who we want you to be. We want you to be the best coach or teacher you ever had. Remember that person? That's who we want you to be. We want you to be somebody who has that kind of a place in somebody's life. And so, so it's pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. And so anyway, but that's, honestly, that's the hardest part. The easy part is going up and presenting, material to them and saying, "Hey, let me show you a path." The hard part is, okay, that was the boom. Okay, now what do we do? How do we, on a daily basis, make this thing come alive? So that'll be different about this time. And I'm really looking forward to it. I've worked on it a little bit, but it's not, it's a few words from me and then a roundtable discussion, with some of the, I think, battalion commanders. So that'll be interesting. And, as I said, I'm looking forward to it. So, fired up to go do this again. And hopefully, if it runs according to plan, hopefully change somebody's life. So, And I will tell you that there's no feeling, like that on the planet. And somebody walking in, more than likely does not want to be there. And then lo and behold, you go ahead and you show them something in a way that is pretty compelling for them. So, as you can tell, I'm moderately fired up about it. So, also get a chance to see my oldest son and his wife and my grandson. So, that's always a silver lining when I head to the East Coast. So, just after Father's Day, going to go see my son, who himself is a father, and get to hang out with them a little bit. John is, by the way, he is a company commander in the 2nd Marine Division. So, we'll get a chance to hang out for a couple days. And so, I don't know, hang out. He's probably busy, but at least see him. And that's always fun. So, looking forward to it. The other thing, interesting is the discussion in the country now about where does all this energy go in the country? Where does it wind up? Where is it spent? Right. And so, in Seattle, over the weekend, a couple shootings and, a death, and inside that, whatever we're calling it now, Chaz, Chop, whatever. And the mayor of Seattle said, yeah, we will be taking that part of the city, back. And, I can't imagine living inside of that, as, that's where your home is, that's where your apartment is, and this thing comes to you. And so, in the form of a street fair, except people get killed. Right, except the area is vandalized. There's graffiti everywhere, and this is the place that you pay taxes to. This is, you're a citizen of, and nobody stands up for you. Everybody else's rights trump your rights, I guess. So, it's been pretty interesting thing to watch. I think most of us that are older, obviously, never seen anything like this in our lifetime. And I would say that you're seeing more and more stuff written about, when does this mob rule thing end? At what point do leaders in this country from all persuasions stand up and say, enough is enough? There's this thing called due process in this country. So whether we're going to take down statues and remove them from public view, or whether we're going to modify how we police, there's a way that we do that. And the way is not that mobs, maraud around cities, that mobs attack people personally and cost them their jobs for simply doing what is quintessentially American, and that is speaking their mind, but you can't, you do that at a price now in this country. And it's, I don't want to say terrifying, but I've heard people describe it like that. And I think that at some point, if this stuff doesn't stop, you're going to see an armed confrontation between groups of Americans, people that aren't having it anymore. And you've overstepped your bounds. I have the right to. I have a right to. But that's not the way this is working right now. People think when they gather in a group, you put a mask on and a hood, and you become anonymous, you can do whatever you want. That you have the right to impose your view of the planet on other people. And I don't know that, you know, we've ever seen this in American history. I know, certainly there's been riots before and things like that. But, I mean, if you watch the just the ruthless nature in terms of online attacks. And then what happens is you have leaders of organizations that roll over for this stuff. And at some points, I mean, you either got to be up to it, you know, and you can't allow, you know, in my opinion, you can't allow quality people to be run out of their livelihood because somebody doesn't like the way they said what they said. Or their apology wasn't sincere enough, right? Or their statement wasn't adamant enough. I mean, again, this to me, it's max of, you know, McCarthyism. When, you know, it didn't matter what innocent people said. All that mattered was his ability to run you out of town. So, you know, you see more and more people writing about, you know, about their concern for what's going on. And so I think, you know, at the end of the day, the American system will show its strength. But I will tell you this, I've talked about on the show, the biggest, you know, challenge that the nation has is leadership. And I don't feel any better about it, you know, tonight, today, tomorrow, than I have in the past. And that is, where are the people, you know, that are supposed to be leading, right, whether it be cities or states, and they can't stand up and tell the truth? They can't stand up for what's right? And I think, you know, you just, I don't know. We have so many people that are elected that seem to be afraid to lead. What they try to do is they try to please these people, please these mobs, and you can't do it. And you're a fool to do it. You're elected to that position, you know, for one reason. And so, you know, and it's, again, the liberal agenda of the concepts of free speech, right? That is quintessentially American. Minority rights, and all that's protected. But not so much right now. So pretty interesting times we live in. It'll also be interesting kind of to travel. I haven't traveled since this thing started. So just get a look to see how the nation is doing this, what life is like in North Carolina. So on a Tuesday morning, the 23rd day of June, which happened to be my late mother's birthday. So my mother, Kathleen, her birthday today. So happy birthday, Mom. My mom is the reason why I am what I am. It was her encouragement of me in my life, whether it be reading, whether it be, you know, go away, go to school, you know, all the different things. And I remember when I told her I was going to join the Marine Corps, she said, "I think you'll love it." And there were other people in my family that weren't as happy. But my mom, no, she said, "I think you'll love it. I think it'll be great." And so anyway, God rest her. Kathleen McNamara smoked Parliaments, drank Vin Rosé, liked her martinis, and was one of the greatest cooks I've ever been around in my life. And, you know, when the chef comes on, you know, you'll hear us talking about, you know, our mothers and cooking and things like that. And I would eat my mom's food over anybody's in my life. Anybody's. She just had a knack for it. And I don't know that I ever ate a bad meal living in Kathleen's house. So, and when I was a kid, I had bad ears and I had heart murmur. And I wound up in the hospital a couple times, and I can vividly remember my mom sitting next to the hospital bed in a dress, building models with me. she would bring me models, and I, you know, you could probably bring glue into the hospital back then, but you know, we built models, and I mean, how many moms do that? Come on. And so, yeah, Kathleen, she liked to be right too. Wasn't afraid to argue with him. And loved Johnny Carson. So, yeah, my mom's birthday today. So, happy birthday, Kathleen. United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official. Good morning to you. First of all, first things first, you know, it's got to be dedicated to, it's got to be dedicated to my mom today. Come on. But this is dedicated to my mom on her birthday. Happy birthday, Mom. I'm not sure this is appropriate.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Mr. President. Happy birthday to you.
Yeah. It's obviously not appropriate for your mother, but it's the only version I have. Like, what the hell?
The battles that you've won, the way you deal with U.S. Steel and our problems by the ton, we thank you so much. Everybody, happy birthday!
Go to my mom on her birthday. Hopefully, you know, one of the earliest memories I have is, you know, since John F. Kennedy is, you know, the subject of that, is watching his funeral with my mom. And I don't know that I really understood, but I knew something was really wrong because my mom was crying. And that's what I remember about John Kennedy's funeral. I remember seeing his kid salute in the famous picture of John Kennedy. But I don't know that I understood what was really going on, but I knew something was really wrong because my mom was crying. So watched it in Sacramento at our home, 4351 Stonehenge Way, a little 3-bedroom house that we lived in when I was a kid. And again, one of my earlier memories, along with model building with my mom. This is dedicated for a second time today to Kathleen, from a grateful son.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Time for us to check the weather here, so we'll do that. But know this, that it's about 3.5 hours before I normally do this, so don't be alarmed. Yeah, don't be alarmed. Currently cloudy and 71 in Quantico. They've got 2 weather alerts, but that doesn't break the minimum of 3 that we need to do to check into it, so... And then down the coast where I'm headed today, Camp Lejeune, it is sunny in 79. In 29 Palms, it is still dark and 73. Camp Pendleton, cloudy in 64. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy in 70. Okinawa, dark cloudy 81. In South Central Afghanistan, it is sunny and 114. Yeah. And then, and it's just getting going, man. Not even trying yet. And then in the Al Anbar province of Iraq, late in the afternoon, it is sunny and 104. They're not trying there either. Both those places could get hotter than that. Cloudy and 64 currently at the home of Al Marine Radio, the Costa Mesa Newport Beach area. Beautiful weather the last, I mean, if you like no humidity, if you like, you know, sun in the 70s, I've got a place for you. So don't touch out dial. More of Al Marine Radio coming up next. we'll check news headlines and see what's going on in the world. So, more of Al Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt. Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara.
and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
To the news, excuse me, to the news we go this morning. Bunch of news from Stars and Stripes. A couple history, anniversary type things. First, they're top of the fold headline, so you know it's a new slow news day if Stars and Stripes is doing history stuff. It may be called the Forgotten War, but the Korean conflict set the stage for decades of tension. Picture of Marines. Yeah, guys wearing leggings, as a matter of fact, loading a wounded Marine, I take it, onto a helicopter, which was the first time that happened in the Korean War. So, yeah, low, what, 70 years later. The Korean War still echoes in our consciousness, right? Started off really bad, got reversed, on the verge of a complete victory. The Chinese intervened, and then a stalemate along the 38th parallel. The Korean War. Forgotten by some, not by others. So, if you want to read, you hear us refer to it, when, you know, Tim Lynch, Jeff Kenney, and I talk. I've never heard Will refer to it yet, but I'm sure he's read it. But it's a book by T.R. Fehrenbach called This Kind of War. It's an awesome book. One of the best books I've ever read. So when people ask me what's a good book I could read, and whether they ask about career or not, I would tell you that that would be at the top of certainly my list. I don't know, probably every one of our lists. Next, this story has been in the news for about a week. I don't know if this is putting lipstick on a pig or what, but headline, U.S. may move thousands of troops to Germany, from Germany to the Pacific, according to a senior White House official. Now, I was just following through on just a threat by the president, because last week, you know, they were moving to Poland or something. In a piece published on Monday in the Wall Street Journal, don't you know, I keep telling you, subscribe to it, National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien wrote that no official announcement has been made, details of any troop moves remain under development, and that military leaders are working on options. Quote, the Cold War practice of garrisoning large numbers of troops with their families on massive bases in places like Germany is now in part obsolete, he wrote. While air bases and logistics hubs remain important, the Cold War-style garrisoning of troops makes less military and fiscal sense than it did in the 1970s. Two valid points. In that theater, Americans and allies faced the most significant geopolitical challenge since the end of the Cold War. An Australian guy named Ross Babbage, former Assistant Secretary of Defense, said Tuesday that the proposal would be welcomed by Australians. It's putting meat back on the bones of this Pacific pivot announced by President Obama in 2011, referring to the policy that the United States announced that would focus on the Far East. What has been happening is a lot of acceleration to deal with the rise of China, and the intended risks there are tensions and conflict in the region. I don't think we're talking about big numbers in a short period of time, but it's reasonable to include Australia on a list of places where people might go. And he ended with this. More of a direct threat would be towards players or actors here in Asia, especially what's happening. Tensions now rising between India and China. And this is a guy named Scott Cord, University of Maryland, you know, guy who does Asia policy. The economics and military threat in Asia, he said, it makes sense to have more troops there in that regard. So anyway, that cauldron continues to boil. And again, you know, the point O'Brien makes about having people stationed there, especially, you know, units, you can put a unit on a plane and get it there in pretty short amount of time. And as he said, the logistics hubs, the airheads, you can't do that. But the rest of the stuff, certainly doable. Soldier charged with plotting terrorist attack against his deployed unit. A 22-year-old soldier has been charged with planning an attack on his army unit in an indictment unsealed in federal court on Monday. Ethan Melzer of Louisville, Kentucky, allegedly sent sensitive materials about his unit, including locations, movements, and security measures, to members of an extremist organization named Order of the Nine Angels, a Department of Justice official said in a statement on Monday. Melzer was charged with conspiring and attempting to murder U.S. nationals, conspiring and attempting to murder service members, providing and attempting to provide material support to terrorists, and conspiring to murder and maim in a foreign country. He was arrested on June 10th after the FBI and the Army had discovered his plot and thwarted it in late May, the statement said. He operated under the alias Etel Regard, according to the indictment. His Army unit was not identified. And I don't get it. Right? He joined the Army in 2018. The following year, he joined the Order of the Nine Angels, the statement said. Some people just get lost in life, right? The group has espoused violent, neo-Nazi, anti-Semitic, and satanic beliefs. It has also expressed admiration for figures such as Adolf Hitler, Osama bin Laden, and other radical Islamic jihadists. He deployed overseas in October. His unit was set to deploy abroad again this past April. Okinawa marks the battle's 75th anniversary with a scaled back ceremony, as you might expect. But one of the longest fights, the longest fight of World War II for the Marine Corps in the Pacific. 82 days, I believe. The general public was told to stay home, though handfuls of locals who lost family during the battle in the final stages did turn out to pay their respects. The governor of Okinawa, no fan of the American DOD, quote, "It's been 75 years since that war ended. However, the sorrow from losing beloved friends and family has never healed. It has only gotten stronger," said Okinawa Governor Denny Tamaki. "It is our duty to keep sending the message of the terror of war and the importance of world peace." So, Okinawa. And then it goes on to talk about the politics of Okinawa these days. And then it gets into Marine Corps go-away stuff. The Just the News. top headline is, fired New York prosecutor was given Biden-Ukraine allegations in 2018, but did not follow up. So is that him playing politics with the position again? What's overlooked in all of this is he was a temporary appointment, never been approved by the Senate, and acting in that capacity. So, I think it's just a bunch of nonsense, if you ask me. Somebody grandstanding. The Major League Baseball, in another headline, the Players Association rejected the final offer from Major League Baseball's owners, and so the commissioner now has the authority to say, okay, here's what we're going to do, we're going to play, and then the union that has never lost. Right, pretty strong union. It has never lost. It has the right to file a grievance for money. So that's the dance that baseball does today. The target is July 24th to begin playing again. I would tell you any distraction, for the love of God, right? Here's another poll that's here. Polling. Strong majority of voters oppose tearing down statues honoring Washington, Jefferson, and Lincoln. Lincoln? I mean, honestly. What in the hell? You know, something I think I should do, because I talk about it so much, is a few headlines. Out of the Wall Street Journal. Most of them opinion pieces. From their editorial board today, America's Jacobean Moment. Referring to the French Revolution, right, the mob of France, blah, 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 blah. Now, I would tell you, though, that the article that you ought to read that's in the op-ed section of the Wall Street Journal, I read it yesterday, because that's when they put it up, is an opinion by a black Harvard economist. His name is Roland Fryer, Jr. Headline, what the data say about police. There are racial differences in use of non-lethal force, but not in officer-involved shootings. Okay, let me read that again. What the data say about police. And he talks about his experience in the piece. He talks about his experience as a young black guy and that he did get treated different and that it did not feel good. And so he speaks of all that. And then he lays out the data, and he talks about in non-lethal use how blacks are three and a half times more likely to be stopped, to be hassled, you know, what have you, than whites are, but that there's no data in any study that he's looked at, to include his own, that says there's racial bias in officer-involved shootings. So, I mean, I would, and again, Harvard economist, for what that's worth, and it tends to be worth a little bit, and he's quoted by the left and the right, and so he's taken, right, to writing and chose the Wall Street Journal. That's why you might decide you want to pay for it. I'm not telling you how to live your life. I'm just kind of making a little suggestion for you there. All right, top five stories in Early Bird. Then we'll take a break, and then Alex Hollings will join us. Number one, House lawmakers put limits on Air Force's planned Global Hawk divestment. Yeah, this is interesting because the Global Hawk, right? These things are awesome, and the Air Force wants to get rid of them. So it's the RQ-4, Global Hawk Surveillance Drone Inventory. Air Force wants to retire a portion of it in fiscal year 2021 as long as it can meet certain criteria. In its fiscal year 2021 budget request, the Air Force proposed retiring all 21 of its Global Hawk Block 30 aircraft, as well as three Block 20 drones modified to the EQ-4B Battlefield Airborne Communications Network variant, leaving its remaining RQ-4 Block 40s to carry out the high-altitude surveillance mission along with U-2 spy planes. But there's two conditions. Ellen Lord, the Pentagon's top acquisition official, must certify the replacement for the RQ-4 will cost less to operate and sustain. And number two, as an alternative, Defense Secretary Mark Esper can endorse the retirement of these RQ-4 aircraft, even if the replacement's operating sustainment costs are higher. What? So Esper could say we're doing it anyway? Interesting. So that means in all situations, we're going to do it. Kind of odd. Now, let me tell you, the drones that the United States flies, unbelievable. You know, I often work with the RQ-9 Reaper. That thing can shoot, stays up forever, right? Helps you watch all kinds of stuff. It's awesome. Number two, U.S. Navy announces intent to link $10 billion contracts for first two Columbia subs. $10 billion. The U.S. Navy is poised to ink an almost $10.4 billion in contracts with General Dynamics Boat to procure the first of two Columbia-class ballistic missile submarines, which carry more than a dozen nuclear missiles on constant deterrent patrols. So, yeah, the Navy and the construction business. Those are huge, huge, huge projects. Number three. House bill charges the Guard and Reserve Forces with defending the nation in cyberspace. Now, this is odd because it's like, doesn't somebody already have that mission? And why is the Guard and the Reserve defending, right? Don't we have Cyber Command? So this is the House Armed Service Committee, obviously in action on a variety of issues. A House Armed Service Committee draft of an annual defense policy bill calls for the National Guard and Reserve components to assist in defending the nation. Oh. Well, guess what? Once again, my bitch with headline writers. Doesn't say that they're assisting. It says they're to defend it. A provision in the bill's markup from the Subcommittee on Intelligence and Emerging Threat, which passed the committee on June 22nd, required a review of status and rules that pertain to the use of National Guard for response and recovery from significant cyber attacks. Okay. Well, why wouldn't they be able to call up Reserve and Guard members for that mission? Is it unlike any other one that they could not call up Reserve units? Number four, U.S. soldier plotted with satanic neo-Nazis to ambush his own unit overseas, according to the Department of Justice. We've already talked about that. Number five, production workers strike against a major U.S. shipbuilder. 4,000 workers went on strike against U.S. Navy's largest shipbuilder Monday after rejecting a three-year contract. It's the first strike by workers at Bath Iron Works in more than 20 years. So look for that to not go on very long as the federal government gets involved in it. A couple of headlines, overseas operations. Dozens affected by toxic exposure from a fire at a hazmat place at Kadena Airfield in Okinawa. The defense minister of Japan expressed his dismay that the Japanese were not told in time, in a timely manner. I'm not sure what that means. I would think that that's a normal thing for American bases in Japan. Next headline. Japan says U.S. hasn't requested more money to host troops. This is in response to something that John Bolton has alleged in his book. Said he demanded $8 billion more in annual payments. And according to the defense minister, that has not been the case. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Alex Hollings is going to join us. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.